Yeah, the cool thing about TikTok is that you don't need to do any distribution work. Unlike in YouTube, you have to focus on SEO. On Facebook, it's a sharing platform, so you have to focus on getting your stuff shared.
And then in podcasting, there's like no distribution.
Yeah, podcasts, it's tough. You have to...
Hey, friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. Today's conversation is with Ariel Vieira. You may recall Ariel from episode 89 of the show in early 2020. It's amazing to learn and see his growth since then. In this live podcast social event episode, you'll learn about Ariel becoming a full-time creator, the ins and outs of TikTok, where he's amassed over 500,000 followers, how you could get started with TikTok, the benefits of using TikTok to collaborate with people and brands, having multiple income streams, and so much more. Also, in this live podcast social event, you'll hear some great audience questions at the end. As always, this episode with Time Save Notes is available on my website, portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Ariel.
Yeah. So let's talk about TikTok. Yeah. What was your like aha moment with TikTok?
Oh, the aha moment was when I was aimlessly scrolling around for hours on end in late 2020, saying to myself, I will go viral on this platform. But the only thing I saw was humor and dancing. And I'm neither a comedian nor a dancer, but I was just really determined that I would get something big out there. And then the voiceover feature came out, and that kind of changed everything, that I can record some video of the city and then do a story via voiceover. And that allowed me to actually tell a story rather than try to dance.
Okay, so 2020, you started looking into it. And then there was the game changer, the voiceover part. When did you start to feel like you had traction on the platform? Like, it sounds like you were like high level interested in it and like some of the features, but from like a content creation perspective and audience building perspective, when did you kind of feel like there was something here?
Yeah, so I've been a content creator for nearly 12 years. I started on Tumblr, but where I really started telling stories on video was live video on Facebook, and I would tell like 20-minute stories about history, really in depth. What really was the challenge on TikTok was to tell it in a minute or less. And I love that challenge because I'm a natural born storyteller. I love telling stories. So when I found this one building in New York City that nearly collapsed due to a hurricane that was coming over, and I was like, holy shit, this is the best story to tell in 1 minute or less. And I got it, I squeezed it in as much as I could. And luckily it went viral. It started getting hundreds of thousands of views. And that just felt like addicting. I was like, ooh, let me tell more stories now.
And what do you think about that TikTok? Why do you think it went like viral?
I think people always love stories about their cities, history. They love learning about things. TikTok, people had the perception that it was just dancing. But I think once people got that adrenaline rush of a great story told in 1 minute, it felt very engaging to a lot of people who had that appetite. And then TikTok also is very good at showing the content that you want to see. So the people who already like history, who already like cities, it was delivered to them.
Okay. And so that one went viral. When was that?
This was about August 2020.
August 2020. Okay. And then now you have 500,000 plus followers on TikTok. What do you think has been like one reason why that's been the case? Like, what do you think has led to that growth?
I think one reason is the actual stories. I've told stories about things in New York City that you would not even think about researching, like a random statue in Riverside Park that was actually imported from Japan surviving an atomic bomb, or random owls that eyes glow green at night right by Herald Square. Whoa. Things like that. Yeah, exactly. That's the reaction. It's that wow reaction. I think that's the key to, at least in my field of history storytelling, to really get people engaged.
So do you only post stuff that you think will get a wow reaction?
Yeah. I mean, actually, there's two things. There's the wow reaction. And then TikTok, as we know, comments could get very crazy. So if you're sensitive, do not read the comments. if you want to build resiliency, emotional resiliency, read the comments. But be careful. It's going to take a while. But since TikTok can be a very volatile place, it sometimes pays off to tell things that are maybe semi-controversial or things that could push buttons. Of course, always do it with good intentions. But if you're intentionally pushing the right buttons, it gets people riled up and then you get a lot of engagement. So that's the second factor.
See, a lot of engagement in the audience. A lot of people head nodding on that, like, yeah, that kind of forward pushing content. You talked about how stuff started going viral, but when did talk to us about like the monetization of like TikTok? Because I know you've been able to monetize on other platforms, and it also seems like you're So how do you think, like, how did you start to realize you could monetize on TikTok?
Yeah, so I'm by no means one of those creators that makes all the money on TikTok. TikTok, the biggest right now way to make money is sponsorships. So when a company pays you to make a TikTok about their company or their app or their location or hotel, the other way is making TikToks for that company itself. Those are the two ways I've done it. So bespoke TikTok content and sponsored content.
Okay. And then do those people just like reach out to you? I think in the past we talked about how like people like your style. Yeah. So do they kind of reach out to you and say, hey, I saw this TikTok that you created. It's different than anybody else, et cetera. I want something like that. Is that, do you think that that's led to more collaborations than other people on TikTok because of like a certain style or?
Yeah. The cool thing about TikTok is that you don't need to do any distribution work. Unlike in YouTube, you have to focus on SEO. On Facebook, it's a sharing platform, so you have to focus on getting your stuff shared.
And then in podcasting, there's like no distribution.
Podcasts, it's tough. You have to get an audience outside of the podcasting platform. So on TikTok, it does the work for you. So the cool thing is this also applies to lead generation. Mm. So if you actually want to get clients or sponsors, or in my case, companies to work with, they actually just find my content. So I don't do any outreach, barely do any outreach myself. They just find me through the algorithm. So it's just, it pays off to just make good content and try to make the most excellent content you can make. The right people will find you. Yeah.
And it seems like with like there's like a unit of currency almost. It's like, I think we talked about in the past of like a company wants me to create like 3 TikToks for them. Like, it's so interesting how like what a TikTok video is has become like a vehicle for like transferring value. Been like, okay, I just need 3 TikToks, or I need, can you talk to us more about that if that's
I'm not involved in that world, because that would apply more to like lifestyle influencers and people who work in the makeup field and things like that. Fashion, usually they trade TikToks for some free merchandise or free clothes or free makeup kits. But yeah, that is becoming very prevalent. For me as a content creator, if I'm working with a brand, and especially if the brand is going to be featured as the main subject of the video, that's a paid gig. So they would have to pay a sponsorship fee, or if I make videos for them, they're paying for the video production. Otherwise, I think it's a trap with many, especially young influencers, to get caught up in doing stuff for free that really doesn't pay much. You know, a company's not really going to give you exposure on TikTok, because on TikTok, people really don't care about companies. They care about people. Mm. So it really doesn't matter whether a company shares your content or not on TikTok, in my opinion, at least.
You talked about kind of like the voiceover part, but what other kind of, if someone was like starting a TikTok account and they wanted to start creating content on there, like what other things that like are like not hacks, but what are the things that you learned along the way that you're like, oh, if someone was just getting started, they should, you know, they should learn, they should do this, or yeah, anything else that like, you know, since you've been at it for a while that, yeah.
Yeah, it really pays off to be authentic. Be your best self and yourself. Don't try to put on a persona, unless if you want to make a persona, make sure you lean into that. So, but yeah, it's best to be authentic. The reason I say that is that it's not like TV. TV, there's a polish. Things have to be scripted and things have to be filmed and edited and have to pass through a studio. Even on YouTube, there's an editing process and a scripting process. But on TikTok, it pays off to be very spontaneous and very yeah, spontaneous is the best word. So if you are making content that, even if it is very well planned, be sure that it feels like you're just talking to a friend, because I think that's the most effective way when it comes to TikTok. Don't be the authority figure. I would say be more so the friend.
The friend. I like that. And it seems like these days you're starting to see more and more like companies look to TikTok as a way to get the word out, business owners, et cetera. How do you kind of see that space for companies that are like, hey, we don't have like a big marketing team. We're just going to like, you know, publish a couple TikToks or so. Like, have you started to see that? And what do you kind of think about TikTok as like a, you know, a marketing channel for companies?
Yeah, it's very hard for companies to really start on TikTok because people like following people on TikTok. And then actually the algorithm doesn't even favor companies and brands too much, unlike other platforms, maybe like a Facebook or Instagram. So the best way to for a company, I think, to grow is if the company allows for it. I think humor is definitely something to lean on, but make sure it feels authentic. Either hire someone that could authentically do that young TikTok humor, or lean into the humor that you're already good at as a company. The other way is always provide some type of value. Humor is one value, but there's many, many different types of value. Another type of value is actually giving people good nuggets of information. And that's becoming more and more popular on TikTok, but not just TikTok, also YouTube Shorts and Facebook is giving people good information that they can use. So if you're a company, say, about baggage, tell people how to pack, that might work, especially if it's someone who's young telling how to pack for a trip, because TikTok still skews a bit younger than other platforms.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, here, how many people for like a corporate account or for their company think about using TikTok? Anybody? Okay. Two people or so. Okay, cool. So then you also mentioned YouTube. You mentioned YouTube Shorts. TikTok's not your only kind of way that you've been able to make money from content and stuff. Talk to us about kind of like how you've been able to diversify and how, you know, other income streams and kind of what, I don't know, what the portfolio looks like.
Yeah, I think as a content creator, it pays off to diversify. So to not just rely on one platform, because as I mentioned earlier, I was a Tumblr blogger. And Tumblr decided to delete my entire blog of 6 years because of music copyright issues. And this was the age before Spotify and SoundCloud. So I was one of hundreds or maybe thousands of music bloggers that went under the same fate. After that, I learned, oh, wait, don't put all my eggs in one basket. When it comes to making money on different platforms, for me, a big moneymaker is live stream. Live streaming on YouTube and Facebook, and also Twitch is a smaller part, brings a lot of people who are patrons on a monthly basis. And then live streaming, also people give tips, which are called super chats. And also there's ads that you can put on your live stream after it finishes streaming. So you can continue making money off those streams, especially if people are searching for that topic. And that really does help in the travel space, which I tend to cover. The second part is Facebook Reels. And this is where a lot of, especially young TikTokers, have not taken advantage of. It's always subject to change, but Facebook Reels right now, you could still make up to $1,200 per month just by posting. Just by posting. They give you a bonus just by posting. Yeah. And it used to be bigger than that.
People are pulling out their phones right now and posting.
Right. It used to be able to make a few thousand this past year. Even in Instagram, they give you bonuses. Pinterest, if you post short videos on Pinterest, they also give bonuses. I'm not sure how to get invited yet, but the moment I do, I will tell you. So there's a lot of opportunities to make money on these platforms. I think another way is getting people to become patrons of your work. So don't rely just on sponsorships, especially if you're giving value directly to your audience and a very specific audience, especially a specific niche. People will want to be a patron of your work. So patreon.com has been a very good, fruitful service, or YouTube memberships as well.
And so do you think, like, is it like, oh, Tuesday is a TikTok day, Mondays a live stream day, or like how do you kind of think about where to like put more resources in, or yeah, how do you think about where to create? And
So I'm a workaholic. So I post like 4 or 5 times a day
on TikTok.
Not on TikTok, on all platforms.
Okay.
So I edit maybe 1 or 2 TikToks, especially while I'm traveling. Edit 1 to 2 or up to 4 TikToks per day that are posted also on YouTube and on Facebook and on Instagram. And I do a live video, and I post photos as well. But this is not going to be the case for everyone. I really like working quick. But yeah, I don't delineate between each day. I just have a schedule for live streaming. But when it comes to TikTok, I tend to post when I want to post. I don't like forcing myself to post. So if I'm inspired, I'm going to post like 5 times. If I'm not inspired, all right, you got to wait until next week. I'm so sorry.
Say more about that. So like, did you like, I don't know, yesterday or so, did you walk around, you know, Williamsburg and you're like, oh my gosh, like I just found this hidden gem? Or like, yeah, talk to us about like a recent time when you just like got really inspired and you're like, okay, now I'm gonna post a bunch. Like,
yeah, that happened to me when I traveled to England. I just found so many unique things to talk about when it came to culture, food, and the history. So I end up making about average of 4 edited TikToks per day. And my TikToks are like about history, so I go in deep, so it's a lot of editing work too, and music and everything. But for example, on the opposite end of the spectrum, about 2 years ago, mid-2021, March 2021, I started going viral a lot. It went up to like 300,000 subscribers. But it was of specific videos that were getting very terrible comments. So one video was terrible comments towards me. The other video was terrible comments about the subject matter of the video. And I just couldn't handle using TikTok for a while. So I just quit TikTok for like 3 months, exactly when I started going viral, which is counterintuitive to what everyone would tell you. But to me, it felt like the best decision of my life, because the moment I came back, I went viral 2 times over, because I found inspiration at the right place.
And so when you were, this sounds like you're saying like you didn't want that kind of audience or those kind of people. Is that?
I think the best learning from it is take a break when you want to, this is if you're a content creator specifically. If you're working for a company, it's a different thing. You're being paid. So you got to find the inspiration. But if you are a content creator, then it's okay to take a break, I think. Because TikTok, as I mentioned, authenticity pays. So if you are not inspired, then people are going to feel that, and you're going to start seeing the numbers tank, and then that's going to get you worried, and then you start blaming the algorithm, and then you start blaming the world, and then you get frustrated, and then, yeah, it ends up being a snowball effect. So it's better not to let that accumulate all that resentment. So if you're not enjoying what you're doing at the moment, chill out, take a break, wait until inspiration comes again.
I'm enjoying this moment.
Oh, cool.
And so then is the goal kind of full-time content creation? Is that where you're trying to go?
My prerogative is to entertain. So I just want to provide the best entertainment to people, whether that might be through TikTok, YouTube, or movies or documentaries. It doesn't matter to me. So I'm going wherever the wind blows, in essence. But yes, full-time content creation is a big deal. And I realize, especially now with YouTube is the biggest money maker directly. I think as a content creator, I'd rather make my money directly from my content rather than rely on companies. It could be great working with awesome companies, but you end up putting a reliance on something else that's not your content. So I've noticed that especially with content creators that focus only on sponsorships, their content suffers. Because it feels like they're just catering to the advertiser. They're not catering to the public. I find it way more important to cater to the public first and foremost. The advertiser, if it fits with what the public wants, then it's perfect. If it doesn't, then at least I'm making my money directly from my viewers.
Well, before we turn it over to the audience for a couple questions, is there anything else about TikTok and diversifying income streams and working your way to going full-time as a creator? I know you're an entertainer, but like you're kind of heading in that right direction of being, you know, solely, you know, full-time creator. anything else you'd like, I have to share this, David. Like,
yeah, well, I already function as a full-time creator. I think the biggest learning is diversify, pay attention to all the platforms. And then this could go in very different directions, but focus on products that you can provide to your audience beyond the actual videos. So in my case, it's merchandise and it's prints, photo prints and postcards and things like that. I think it's worth it to provide products to your viewing audience, especially that's valuable to them. Don't focus on you making money. Focus on what you can give to the person who's giving your attention.
Love it. Okay. First question, Carlene.
What do you think are the largest misconceptions that people have when you tell them like, oh, I'm a creator, I'm a full-time creator on TikTok that you'd like to squash right now?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you a specific story. I was in Florence and I did like a walking tour just for my own pleasure. And I met this couple from Czech Republic and I told them, yeah, I was a full-time content creator. And they said, oh, so you just bullshit on video and you just like make jokes? And the guys meant it seriously. He wasn't trying to be too condescending because it was also a different culture. But I end up squashing his attitude down immediately. He says, no, I have people who watch because they can't travel. That's at least a portion of my audience. It's people who can't walk around, who have mobility issues, the very elderly. Very young kids who don't obviously can't go out to the French Alps on their own. So I provide that value to at least that subset of people. So like, yeah, it's actual work and it actually provides something of value to people who want it.
Okay, so I have a practical logistical question. What do you use to edit and was there any learning curve there? And then also how do you store all your files and where?
Oh, yeah. So pro tip, buy the biggest iPhone you can. Do not buy the 256 gigabyte one. Buy the 1 terabyte now or the 3 terabyte, whatever they offer. So first, I have everything on my phone. Second, don't take 4K video because unfortunately, 4K video eats up a lot of data and also makes everything slower. So shoot in 1080p, my recommendation. And then the second thing for editing, I use Adobe Premiere Rush, which actually made editing a lot more fun. I used to dread editing on my laptop, but Adobe Premiere Rush, you could do it directly on your phone, and it feels like a game of Tetris because you just cut clips around, they all snap together. You're kind of making a puzzle piece out of different clips together. So yeah, that's a great app. When it comes to storing content, aside from your phone, which can store a lot, up to 2 terabytes on iCloud, I would recommend Google Drive. But there's one hack with Google Drive.
Tell us.
If you have your own website domain and you sign up for Google Drive Business Suite, you technically have unlimited data. They don't limit you to 2 terabytes. Or if you decide to pay 10 terabytes, which they charge an obscene amount, I don't pay that fee. I pay the 2 terabyte fee and I have already like 8 terabytes stored on my Google Drive, which is a lot of data.
Got a follow-up question.
Do you have like a naming or folder system or is it just like all your stuff on your, sometimes when I look at my phone, I'm like, oh my gosh, everything is everywhere mixed in with my pictures of just going out with my friends. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So luckily every single file has metadata, especially if you're shooting on an iPhone. I assume Android, the same thing. So I shoot mostly on my phone. So it always has metadata. So you can always sort through dates and things like that. But yeah, I put in different folders. Now it's getting more complicated because I have editors that I'm hiring and those editors have to have shared Google Docs and that has to be very well organized. In my case, it's through places because I'm a travel vlogger. So I sort through each city or country.
If someone were to want to start on TikTok pretty much from nothing, what would be, you know, the first 2-3 things that you would recommend they do?
Yeah, I would say, I think the most effective way to start on TikTok is sharing pro tips about something they feel comfortable about or sharing your art, one of those two things. Or if you're someone who's humorous, being humorous. There's many ways of going about it, but share whatever you're good at first and foremost. So don't try to do something that some other influencer is doing. If you are want to be a lifestyle influencer but don't know how to do makeup, don't try to do makeup. It's probably the worst thing you could do. Do whatever feels natural to you. You mentioned photography earlier. Show that photography because people are going to love it. Especially the culture around that photography is also a different aspect. So yeah, share what you're best at. If you're a dancer, dance. If you're a gardener, garden.
Has there ever been a time where you were inspired but didn't feel the need or want to share? Or just keep it to yourself?
Oh yeah, all the time. I'm definitely not that type of influencer where I share every single part of my life. So I tell stories specifically about history, architecture, and food. So I try to keep it away from my personal life as much as possible. So the reason I make that distance is because I don't want my personal life to get tangled up with my entertainment. So yes, I try to keep a lot of things to myself, even when traveling around. If I'm not making content, I'm going to fully focus in the moment at hand. I think that's tricky, especially if you're a vlogger, like a life vlogger or lifestyle influencer. It's very tempting to share every single detail about your life, but you will probably regret that if you become super famous overnight. So be sure to not share everything. Okay, I would say this very practically. Share right now what you would share if you had an audience of 10 million. Would you share your apartment where you live if you had an audience of 10 million? Think about that. There's a lot of other things to think about. Will you share what you're eating for dinner with 10 million? Maybe, maybe not. So if the answer is yes, then share it.
And you think about that when you're creating?
Yes, all the time. Yeah. Yeah. I operate under the feeling that I'm in millions of followers.
Can you talk more about your process? Like, since it involves travel, do you have like a planned out content calendar of like 4 weeks from now, 8 weeks from now, et cetera?
Well, that's a great question. So the short answer is no. No, I don't like planning at all. So I think that's part of my content as well. It feels very spontaneous, very in the moment. Part of my TikTok videos feel like FaceTime videos. So the only type of preparation I do personally is research whatever I find interesting. So I'm constantly reading about history, urbanism, food history, and kind of, so my goal in my videos is to be a great conversationalist. So I focus on just learning about as many things I can in general that fascinate me. And that's what makes my content click. But that won't apply to everyone. If you are a planner, then plan. George R.R. Martin, the writer of Game of Thrones, said that there's two different types of writers, and this also applies to social media. There's the architect and there's the gardener. The architect plans everything from top down. They outline in terms of content. They make a social media calendar. They make a list of ideas. They make maybe a production timeline. They might even make a Trello. It might get very complicated. And then there's the gardener who just kind of goes day by day by just going with the flow and seeing how inspiration hits them. Then you might kick into production mode when inspiration hits you, but you kind of just go with the flow. Both work really well, but just make sure you know which one you are so you don't get into the trap of over planning. Because if you were to tell me to plan, oh my God, I'm going to hate it. So if I work with a company, I say, hey, let me do it my style. If you're okay with that, if they are, then it's going to be a good working relationship. If they are not and want to know every single detail and every single plan, I might second guess whether I want to work with that company.
If you're open to sharing, what are some mistakes that you made that you learned from that you could tell us about so we don't have to make those same mistakes?
In today's society, it's very easy to tread on topics that a lot of people are very sensitive about. So it depends on your threshold of resilience when it comes to online comments. But be aware that there's some certain taboo topics that might not even occur to you when covering. I'm not going to even mention those topics right now because that even puts me in danger of what I cover. But yeah, there's certain topics that you have to watch out for that are taboo. You can skirt around them. You can approach them in a different way and still give value to your audience. I think the second learning I had to avoid is don't produce content when you're not really feeling it. If you're not feeling it, or if you don't feel to make the plan for it, either way, it's going to come off on the video. It's going to be very obvious that you hated doing that.
Cool. Well, Ariel, when people want to learn more, they want to follow your content, where can they do that?
Yeah. I'm on YouTube, Urbanist Exploring Cities, TikTok, Ariel Vieira, my name, and on Facebook and Instagram, Urbanist Live. Ooh. And then on Spotify, you can search me on Urbanist. I have 4 original albums as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Woo woo!
Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.